Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127-games.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Wargaming Recon. As always, I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Here on Wargaming Recon, we cover all things historical and New England gaming, so you can find out all sorts of stuff by visiting us at our website, which is wargamingforums.com. Of course, you can find the show notes for this episode, episode 77, by visiting wargamingforums.com/WR77, and that'll take you to all of our show notes for the show. On today's episode, we have a fantastic guest for you. As those of you who have listened to the last episode, episode 76, as those of you will know, I did a review of Wally Simon's Secrets of War Game Design. I gave a glowing review, and I strongly recommend that you go and check it out. You can access it by going to wargamingforums.com/76. But I am very delighted to say that I recorded a little bit of an interview with the editor and publisher of Wally Simon's Secrets of War Game Design, Mr. Russ Lockwood. He and I did a chat on TalkShoe, and I know that TalkShoe's not so great, is really what it is. We used that because it was the best way for Russ and I to get a chance to talk. My preference with guests is to talk on Skype. I get a better audio quality. When you listen to the recording that I did with Russ, you're going to notice a couple of things. First off, you're going to notice that the audio quality is, well, it's a telephone, really. It's telephone quality, so you're going to kind of get an echo or whatever, and I've done my best to polish it up a little bit and make it a little bit better for all of you. Now that I have my new setup here in the Wargaming Recon Studios, I got some cool new podcasting gear. Previously, I've mentioned my Blue Snowball mic. I got a shock mount for it, which basically means if I tap the desk or accidentally touch stuff near it or, you know, move around or whatever, you're not going to hear any vibrations on the microphone. I picked up something called a pop filter. So when I say things like pop, you don't get this really loud, glaring, like harsh audio sound in your ears. And then I also picked up, most recently, a mic stand. When I had been recording with my mic, to get the best quality out of it, to give you that nice warm sound of my voice, you could be like, oh, Jonathan, we like your voice. When to get that, I'd have to lean into the mic and hunch over on my desk, and it was really uncomfortable, especially, you know, recording for half an hour, or however long that episode happened to be. Now that I get the mic stand, I can sit in my chair a little more comfortably. It's a little easier for me to get the mic right in my face, to chat into it and talk to you and tell you all the things that I want to tell you. Well, we have lots to cover in the episode, but all of that's going to be covered in the interview. One other comment about my recording with Russ Lockwood. TalkShoe, for some reason or another, had been given a lot of technical difficulties to us during our chat. Russ kept on getting disconnected, and of course, the beginning of the recording got destroyed. It was, I say destroyed, but it was really not usable is what it was. So I had to cut all that off. And then what you're left with is basically half of the conversation. So I need to give a big apology to Russ for the technical difficulties that appeared on the show when we did our recording. And of course, to the fact that TalkShoe kind of messed things up with the beginning of the audio. There's just no way I could have saved it. It's gone. But there's still a lot of good conversation that happens in that recording. To kind of catch you up on things, Russ and I talked a little bit about Wally Simon's Secrets of War Game Design. He mentioned that he, as a result of Wally passing away, that he was able to get the rights to Wally's writings. And then he had cherry-picked all these years of writings, all these articles, took out what he liked the most, and put it into Volume 1 of Wally Simon's Secrets of War Game Design. That's really a mouthful, isn't it? But he put it into Volume 1 of this, and it covers all sorts of stuff. He introduced to us what his favorite sections were, which of course happened to be the first and the last. And you're going to say, why of course? Why would that of course be his favorite? Well, whenever you're doing anything in life, whether it's a presentation, an introduction, a podcast, or a booklet, you want to start off strong and end strong, right? Because that's what people remember. So he picked his favorites, the strongest parts, right? And he took those and put it in the beginning and the end. So to begin with, you get the American Civil War telescoping battlefield, and you end with Sixth Sense for sequences of play. So those were the parts he liked the most. Russ, of course, went on to talk about his experience throughout the years as an editor and all the different projects that he had worked on, all the different computing magazines. He worked on Mac User and PC and Byte and PC Sources and just all sorts of different stuff as an editor. And then he also is probably most well known to people as the owner and editor of MagWeb. And he talked a little bit about that as the lead-in for this publication that he did. As a result of doing MagWeb, which basically started off small with a few magazines and then ballooned into, I think he said, 100-and-something magazines, he culled content from that. He licensed the content, reproduced it on the website, you paid a subscription, you had access to it, and he basically re-encoded everything, re-did everything so that he took the content and then typed it up, manually coded it into a computer, and put it out on the web for subscribers to get. But as a result of that, he became friendly and became knowledgeable about Wally Simon and Wally Simon's writings. So that kind of led into his getting the rights to the writings and being able to publish them like this. We also talked about the cover for the booklet. I mentioned how much I liked it, that I opened the package that he had sent me and how much I've appreciated that he sent me this review copy. And I opened it and it has all this color on the front and just all sorts of really cool pieces and components to it. Russ had mentioned that it's actually pretty funny that on the cover is a toolbox with some old tools that he had in his garage. So these, the components in this picture were taken, the picture was taken at his house in his garage, stuff he had, you know, some old tools. He has this ruler in there from MagWeb. He has like a magnifying glass and a calculator and measuring stick and, you know, dice and just terrain and all sorts of different stuff. So I had complimented him basically on the cover of it and how much I liked the cover of it. He talked about Wally Simon at length, actually, and you could tell how much connection there was between Russ and Wally and how much he liked Wally. He also went on to talk about the fact that there will be a Volume 2. Volume 2, he said, was basically, he wrote Volume 1, well, not wrote, but he compiled Volume 1, edited it, did the layout, and then gave it off to his graphics guy, who has been working with him for a while. The graphics guy also helped him out with his Napoleonics rule set, which is called Snappy Nappy, interestingly enough. But the graphics guy, you know, he gave, was given this, and said, okay, you know, you put in what you need to put in and stuff, and then immediately, Russ had said, he began working on compiling the parts for Volume 2. So Volume 2 is supposed to come out in November. He said that depending on how well Volumes 1 and Volumes 2 do in the marketplace, if, you know, just one or two people buy it, that there probably won't be any more volumes. But he has the rights to all 20 plus years of Wally's writings. So he's willing to go and cherry pick out as much as happens to be necessary to keep on putting out volumes 3 and 4 and 5 and 500, as if the case happens to be, and just all sorts of content. So that's basically the stuff that you had missed because of the issues with the recording. And I'm laughing, not because it's funny, but when something tragic like that happens, you can either be sad and defeatist and say, oh, crud, you know, I lost this audio, the audio is bad, I can't use it, so I can't do anything here, I'll just admit defeat and not do anything. Or you can laugh about it, which is what I do, and you can soldier on and try to come up with something. And I decided, well, this recording is not there. I can't use it. You know, it's bad. It's just unusable. So I'll take what I can use, and I will spruce it up and do everything, and then I'll just kind of give a synopsis and an introduction for everything to cover the parts that are not going to show up in the actual show, not show up in what you're listening to right now. And that gets us to where we are now. At this point, I would like to go ahead and, of course, once again, apologize to Mr. Lockwood for the difficulties we had with the recording. And for all of you listeners, I want to say that I think you are going to really enjoy the interview. It's not really an interview. It's not like, where were you on the night of July 4th and what did you do then or whatever. But with the recording that Russ and I did. So I think you're going to really like it. I'm going to turn things over to that. And that's going to take us from now until the rest of the show. And that's about it. So I hope you like it. And, you know, as always, because I'm not going to get to say this at the end of things, but as always, don't forget, keep on gaming. And without further ado, I give you my recording with Mr. Russ Lockwood, editor and publisher of Wally Simon's Secrets of Wargame Design.
You know, regarding the your sometimes deadlines call you, I mean, as a journalist, I know exactly the feeling, and I, for 5 years, I did a radio show called Computer Wise, where it was supposed to be 2 hours, and I talked to the station. I said, look, 2 hours, and I'm going to bore myself out of the off the air. So they allowed me to do only 1 hour of Computer Wise. And so, you know, there were just days where you go to the station and like, well, I'm working on this. This is what I'm going to talk about. Sometimes it works, and sometimes I wish I only had 10 minutes of Computer Wise and would get out.
It can be really tough coming up with content sometimes. You sit there and you think, okay, I just covered this, this, and this last time, and there's nothing new going on. What do I say now? I have, you know, however long to fill up. And this used to be an hour-long show, and then over the time I realized, as much as happens in the world of wargaming, it's not always easy to give a new kind of spin on it for an hour worth of time, so I've kind of downgraded it to a half hour, 45 minutes. That way I'm able to get more content out, and if I don't get to something that particular week, next time an episode comes out, I have content then, and otherwise I feel like sometimes I may have been padding a show or two where people are like, oh, why won't he just shut the heck up so we can listen to another show or something? And now I don't have to worry about padding content anymore. I give what I got, and I hope it's working.
Yeah, well, that's what the fast-forward key is for, right?
Yeah. A lot of players now I like, they have, you know, you can either do like a double time or time and a half playback, or you can just kind of jump ahead 15 or 20 seconds and move along into the story.
No, you know, that was one thing that MagWeb, when I was creating it, but, you know, you had deadlines. I started out because of the technology, and unlike what you see now where they just basically take a snapshot of the page or make a JPEG out of the page and put it in a PDF, back then I was OCRing every page so that every bit of text was copyable and you could take it out and put it in a research paper and use the URL at the top as a footnote, or you could take an order of battle out and slap it in a Word document so that you could, or a map or whatever you wanted to. So it was very, very flexible. But that was one thing. Boy, you were never bored. I started doing about, I think I could get, in 1996, I was doing about one a week by the time you scanned everything and corrected it and all that, because even in the more, you know, say, call it late 2000s, when the scanner was upgraded and the software was upgraded, 99% accuracy still meant one out of every 100 characters was going to be wrong. And if you just look at any given magazine, that's a lot of characters to correct.
It is a
checker or no.
I work in a library, and what I do, I work in what is called interlibrary loan. We get and send stuff all over the world, and we get asked all the time to obtain either entire magazines or, you know, journal articles for people, and it can be very difficult not only tracking down the content that the people want, but then once you obtain it, getting it in a format that they can use. So more often than not, you know, whatever file format we get, we end up having to, you know, convert it into something or double check to make sure everything worked just right. And it's actually really a problem when people ask for and they get either microfilm or microfiche, because they try to, you know, print things out or copy things or scan stuff in such a way, and it doesn't always translate the way that they would think it would. And they get some interesting results sometimes.
Oh yeah, the early versions. Not so much this one because it was always 8.5 by 11. But some of the old M1s and the Sagas. That was another one where they're 8.5 by 5.5.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, a page is turned sideways and folded over. You know, when you do the reduction, some of those fonts just kind of blur. I mean, it's bad enough trying to pick them out with your eye. But, you know, there were a lot of retyping. So, like I said, I ended up reading an awful lot doing MagWeb, which, of course, you know, I guess is a fun sort of job. But after a while, it's a job doing copy editing on text.
Yeah, and like you said, you had a lot of magazines over the years that became part of MagWeb before you closed it down in 2009. So I can just imagine the countless hours you sat there hunched over the content and looking over the magazine article. And is that an A or is that, what is that?
Yeah.
Trying to figure it out and then enter it in.
One of the biggest time wasters is actually not only reading the article, but doing what it said. So if you're sitting there doing a Wally Simon article and he's like, you know, that's not a bad idea. You know, you start looking over there and, well, let's see if we can use that with this and this with that and so forth. So, but in the end, the best part about any sort of mechanisms or any sort of rules is the ability for a game to move and where people are not, or I guess players, are not concentrating on the mechanics, they're concentrating on the units in front of them. Whether it's a stand of miniatures, it's a single figure, it's a cardboard counter in a hex board game. You start getting involved in the simulation and the game, and you're not involved with it. What do I do? Is that plus one for this? Is that a minus one? Is it back a hex? And I think that as you look back on the great games and the great times you have, and gaming is, wargaming especially, is kind of a social activity. I know people like to do shoot 'em ups on the computer and so forth, and me too, but, you know, the best times you have are the times we remember, oh man, remember I took that city, or man, when we collapsed the flank, or oh, we got bowled over. I can't believe we didn't do it. You remember those things. Hopefully you don't remember, oh, man, if only I had another plus two. Where would I get another plus two for this sucker?
Exactly. I can, you know, just think back on games over the years where, you know, something just major happened in it, and, like, years later, still talking about it with people.
Yeah,
just like you said, oh, remember when you tried to do this, and then you fell on your face because of whatever, and usually you happen to remember the negative things where my friends end up making a fool out of themselves, but the good things as well.
Yeah, you know, adrenaline helps memory.
Yeah, it does. And I find that going to conventions in particular, I get a lot of that, and I could see Wally Simon's Secrets of War Game Design being something that would be very popular at a few of the conventions that I've gone to, namely Huzzah up in Maine, and also I could see it being very popular over at Havoc, which is held in Western Mass.
I've been to Havoc a couple of times, yeah.
So you can understand the atmosphere, and it has this really nice old-school wargaming kind of feel about it, which comes through in this booklet that you've edited. And I could just see people picking it up, and like when I've gone to Huzzah, you know, playing in a game and going through and, like you said, not remembering, did I get my plus whatever or minus whatever? Was I supposed to do this? But then afterwards walking around the convention with people and grabbing, you know, a pint of something and just talking about what we had in our game and what else is going on in other people's games, and then reconnecting with those same people, you know, later on either via email or whatever the case happens to be, and then seeing them next time at that con or another con and talking about the same stuff again. And, oh, I liked how they did this, and, oh, they changed this for this time compared to how it was before. And just those stories. And I think wargaming is a great way to kind of get people out to connect with one another. This might be a broad generalization, but I think that sometimes some people, anyway, who are into wargaming and this sort of stuff are very introspective and maybe not always as likely to, you know, reach out to the person next to them and say, hey, how are you? Who are you? And, you know, what you're doing here is looking pretty interesting. But having this game in front of you gives you that ability to break the barriers and just kind of knuckle down with someone else who you may never have met before and then end up having this grand time and then, you know, doing it again next time and the time after that.
Yeah, you know, Wally Simon was a great, I mean, in some ways it's not particularly reflective, but in the booklet, but when he went to conventions, he would search out things that he wanted to see, but he wouldn't necessarily sign up and play the game itself. He would just park himself for 2 hours next to the game and just watch, and he'd watch the reactions of people, he'd watch how things move, he'd note the time and so forth, and I think the observational skills plus a heck of a lot of experience in his own basement, because, you know, he ran, you know, weekly, and once he was retired, he could run daily for that matter. He's the only guy I know when he moved out of his house. I mean, eventually he moved into, I want to call it an apartment complex, but it's a little bit more, but it's not like assisted living where you need an orderly or so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But he moved into this apartment complex, and you walked in the door, and the first thing was the kitchen on the left, and the living room was smack dab in front of you, and what's in the living room? A giant wargaming table. No couch. No TVs or bookcases. This was this giant, I mean, that was the center of his social world, putting on games.
I love that.
Now in the basement, that was best I describe, a labyrinth. You know, when I first went there, it's like, okay, you walk in, turn to the right, there's the table, if you're walking in on the basement level. And it's stacked boxes and boxes and boxes. And in fact, if you, let me take a look. See if my memory matches the picture. Yeah, if you take a look at page 2 where they have a picture of Condre, Simon, and Sayre.
Yep.
You'll notice in the background that all the boxes and so forth on those shelves,
mm-hmm.
those went floor to ceiling around three sides, and the fourth side being the entry and exit. And then behind all those boxes was another room filled floor to ceiling with boxes and so forth. And then behind that was another room that had floor to ceiling boxes. And behind that was a casting machine with molds and everything. So so going in there was like, you know, half of it was a manufacturing plant. What do you need? Oh, I'll just make it. And the other half was all these things that he accumulated over the 25 years. So whatever you needed, they would come out onto the table. And it was it was fascinating to look, just even look through boxes, like looking through a time capsule. Wow. Can't believe this is still around. Who has these? You do. There you go.
That's impressive. That's very impressive.
You know, when he passed away, I got a, you know, besides the memories, I also got a couple of memorabilia things and so forth. And one of the things I got was a figure, a 54 millimeter figure that he gave me, of a Napoleonic figure. And in my rule set, Snappy Nappy, when you look at the diagrams, those you know, black and white illustrations that depict melee and movement and all that sort of thing, his figures is what I turned upside down on the scanning table.
Oh.
Make a scan of to make the form of what I drew. So that you would, when you were looking at a top-down figure, you really were looking at a top-down figure from Wally Simon's collection, which is,
oh, that's interesting.
So it's he lives on. I mean, certainly in memories, but also in rule sets beyond his own, and of course in his own original writings.
I haven't had a chance yet to read your rule set, Snappy Nappy, but I've flipped through it and I noticed that those diagrams. And notice how interesting they were, but I never knew that the figure was actually based on a real model. That's interesting to know.
Yeah, I can certainly make words dance on a page, but graphics, I need an awful lot of help and spend an awful lot of time. You'll find a map of Austerlitz in the back, because there's a scenario that goes with it. And that was 3 solid days to make that map.
I can believe it.
Which my graphics buddy said, man, you should have given it to me. I would have knocked it out in, a couple hours. That's you. You're the graphics guy. I'm the word guy.
Exactly. The word guy needs the graphics guy, and the graphics guy needs the word guy.
Yeah, and we do give, I guess I should say, when we reference the graphics, that's Steve Brandis, who is credited on the inside of the booklet on the copyright page.
I've never been one who was graphically inclined, so when I come across anyone who can do just about anything with that, it might be very simple to them, but I hold them in great awe just by seeing all the different sort of stuff that they can do with layout, imagery and stuff. It's beyond understanding to me.
It's still going on, but I was at the World Board Gaming Championship.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I'm gonna guess. I don't know. This thing takes over the Lancaster Host Hotel, which is also the venue for a couple of the HMGS conventions, Cold Wars in the spring and fall in early November. And I'm gonna guess that there were probably anywhere between 1,500 and 2,000 people there on the Thursday when I pulled in. And one of the cool things about that is that you can just wander around and see all games. I mean, old Avalon Hill games that you stuck in the attic or were sold off decades ago to the brand new stuff. And you look at the Avalon Hill game and you look at, I don't know, Waterloo or Africa Corps or whatever, and a blank hex is, well, a blank hex. And you look at something like Amateurs in Arms, which is the 1812 game by Clash of Arms, I think it is. I don't know who did the map, but wow, what a great map. Old time feel, like you're looking at an 1812-ish era map. And of course, it's got its areas and counters and so forth, but I was just mightily impressed with, every year the graphics just get better and better and better on board games and all sorts of things that contribute to the hobby. Although I have to admit, the one thing that I've noticed in my advancing years is that I like bigger counters. I just purchased an old SPI title, which has been remade. I think this is the third edition. It's called Wachtum Rhine, which is the Battle of the Bulge. And the maps are absolutely gorgeous. The counters are great. But they're the old school half-inch counters. And I'm like, I think magnifying glass might be a little more appropriate for this game. So I've noticed that the 5/8 inch counters are a lot better. And you know what? An inch counter sounds even better to me than it did 10 years ago.
I'm one of those people, I like counters to be very thick. I have a hard time picking up, those thin card counters that you seem to find everywhere. For some reason, I'm guessing cost reasons.
Yeah,
and you're trying to get those, and they just slide around. And next thing I know, I knocked someone's model over, or something fell this way, and this territory apparently ends up having 4 extra armies that we never knew it had because I'm moving the stupid things around, and I can't grab them for whatever reason. And the places that make thicker counters are places that I love. I think it's Wizards of the Coast. They put out collectible miniatures, historical or semi-historical miniatures game called War at Sea, and they had counters originally that were really thin, and then when they made new counters for them, they were a lot thicker. So I was a huge fan of their new counters because I could actually grab them and do all sorts of things with them. It was very helpful.
Yeah, one of the cool things, and I'll give them a plug because I played the game is. I guess it came out last year, so it's not a new game, but it's called Sargents. And they came out with a new version, I guess it's called Day of, I want to say Battle, but that's not it. That's the rule set I edited. Well, it's a new one. Don't worry about it. I'll think of it later. And they combined the miniature, so there's actually a 20-millimeter figure that's all painted in there with counters. And the board is made up of really thick cardboard jigsaw puzzle pieces, where a piece is about 6 inches by 6 inches, and some of the, quote, pieces are 12 inches by 12 inches. And they all, very, very clever of them, they all piece together, and they're back printed as well. So when you get tired of one thing, well, just, you know, you can make your own map. It's like a geomorphic map with back printing. So there is literally, I don't know, there must have been 20 tiles in the game that I was playing. So whatever mathematician you've got out there can figure out how many different variations of a game board you can have by just flipping one tile at a time. But the stuff was gorgeous. I mean, you know, they really invested in the art in it. And the geomorphic jigsaw piece style map, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
It sounds fantastic.
Oh, played all right too. He had a great thing. I mean, it's an event deck where you flip over three cards, and each card has two actions in it: move, shoot, hide, spot. No, wait, look, not spot. Same difference. And you have cards in your hand, and you play your cards upside down, and you have to match the actions, and you know so. It isn't like you could shoot all three times. You might have to move, or you might have to look because of the way the card's structured. And there's a little storyline that goes along with the cards, and this gets back to the remember that game when. And I think, you know, that parts of his design like that are just absolutely brilliant for its execution. But again, you know, that's a rules mechanic that I had not come across. I mean, I've come across where you play a card and you do what the action is, but, you know, by the time you have the card that you want, well, that's not part of the actions that are there. So that just represents fog of war, or just snafus, I guess, is the World War II term.
So. That's definitely an interesting way to portray that on the tabletop.
Well, it does mix things up. And of course, you know, when we were playing, I was playtesting his new, a bridge, basically. You had to take the bridge. And, you know, what's the first thing you do? Well, I can see where he is. I can see where I am. I want to shoot, you know. No, you have to either put move or hide. Oh. All right, mulligan, give me the card back. I have a move card, you know, here. So, but, you know, about the fifth or sixth turn, we had everything coming along. And then, you know, just playing the game. That's the whole point of games. Tweaking something. I mean, there were other things that I thought needed tweaking. Some of the modifiers he used were a little bit confusing. But on the whole, I mean, that's the whole point. Wargaming, by definition, I think, is getting something and then tweaking it. Unless you're in a tournament.
Well, hopefully the tweaking was done beforehand.
Well, you know, Rich Hassenhauer, the designer of Fire and Fury, very incredibly successful, the standard for American Civil War miniature gaming, and as well as a springboard for all sorts of systems that just basically took his system and said, okay, now we're going to do Horse and Musket, or now we're going to, 7 Years' War, and now we're going to do Ancients and so forth. He once had a quote that he told me, and it stuck with me. It says, well, when you play a game, you're playing inside the designer's head, meaning that the designer has these preconditions, and he has these perceptions, and the two of them combine into a rule set, and that's what you're playing. You may not like bits and pieces of it, and all rules, every one of them has quirks, but that's what we as war gamers do. You don't like something? Change it. You change black powder. I mean, there's a $50 hardcover, incredibly colorful book, and yep, you're a wargamer. You changed it.
I call it the Games Workshop metric, where for years I got into miniatures gaming by playing GW games, 40K and Battlefleet Gothic and stuff. Mm-hmm. So playing those and being locked into, you have to play with their stuff the way they tell you to play it, the way they interpret their own rules. for whether you're playing casually or whatever, like, this is how you have to do everything. And then when I started transitioning into more and more historical stuff, being able to, it was very much like getting thrown in the deep end without knowing how to swim, without having anything. And I think I freaked out a little bit because I was like, oh, you know what? I'm going to try this Black Powder rule book. It looks really cool. And I bought it. And then I'm like, so where do I buy the Black Powder models? Where do I buy the Black Powder this? And I was like, I don't know what to do. And so I actually reached out to Henry Hyde from Battle Games. And I said, so, Henry, do you got any suggestions for me? And I sent him this email, and he replied, and he said, you know, I don't have enough time to be able to, what you really need me to do is write you, like, a 30-page paper on all the different things out there that you can do this or that or what. But he very kindly explained stuff, and then once I read through everything again, I was able to say, oh, you know, I like these models. It's okay for me to use models made by another company. It's okay for me to use terrain from here or this from that. And then just reading through the rules and having the rule designer say, if you don't like something we did, change it, was like opening a doorway to a new world for me to be like, oh, I can change what's in the book. I don't have to go with what they said. It was very foreign to me, but I found that I prefer that. And having, you know, a game designer say, go ahead and do it. It's fine. You know, just because I did it doesn't mean it's not going to work for you. Do what's going to work for you is now something that I look for when I look at rules. Do they give, you know, their little nod saying, hey, you know, it's not going to work for everyone. Make it adaptable for whatever you need. And being able to do that, I think, is something that sets Wargamers apart a little bit, but also I think is very endearing. You're able to say, you know, I don't think this is very accurate, or maybe it's not going to work with the time span you have or the people you play with. And so you just cross that out and you write something else in, and that's where I think you really need a booklet like Wally Simon's Secrets of Wargame Design, because it gives you ideas and suggestions for how you could do all of that so that you don't have to just kind of come up with everything on your own if you don't want to.
Yeah, I mean, one of the fellows that helped me with Snappy Nappy, in fact, used his basement and his figures and so forth a lot. Here it is, published, there you go, thank you for helping me out. He's listed as a, you know, you always give your contributors a little plug in and handed them a copy of the rule. Thank you very much. What's the first thing he does? Oh yeah, by the way, I've been meaning to tell you, I don't like that rule, so I'm going to change it. So one of the key components of Snappy Nappy is that, and one of the ways that you get a lot more movement on a table is that when you get hit, you take a morale check. Snappy Nappy does not use figure removal. We don't use casualty caps or anything like that. We use a roster system. Although you can use casualty caps, I suppose. But the key mechanism is that you roll until you pass. So as you fail more morale checks, bad things accumulate. And, maybe you just stop. Now you're backing up an inch. Well, maybe you're backing up half a move. Well, maybe you're turning around and fleeing and routing to full move back. So it opens up holes and so forth. But that was one thing that he doesn't like, because when he plays, he wants to have a little more control over the situation, and I'm a little more of a chaotic gamer, certainly as a designer. And so what he did is that when you fail, that's it. You stop. That's all. It's like, okay, but, you know, it's the law of unintended consequences. You know, if you just stop, I mean, that means your elite guys, who are basically a 60% chance of passing, I mean, they might hold forever. And he says, well, yeah, but on the other hand, I tend to roll a lot of, you know, ones. They crumble really quick, so. But, you know, again, this is the same thing. I mean, there's a quote somewhere in Wally's writing, where he said he never understood why people would always play rules as written, R-A-W, rules as written, if they didn't like them. So he always would change them. And I think that's part and parcel of Wally's personality, but that's also part and parcel of Wargamers. And then that's, you know, reflected in the story, you know, the guy my buddy who helped me develop Snappy Nappy, and he changed the rule because he wanted more control, and I was a more chaotic designer. I wanted things to move on the tabletop, not be the slugfest that Napoleonics often become. So But it's an interesting, it's always interesting to twist to see how people look at things and how they change them.
Definitely. I think everyone looks at things in a different way, and I think some people look at things very differently from everyone else.
Yeah, the only time, and you mentioned this, where you were thrown in the deep end, the only, rules that absolutely need to be done as written is when you play tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you need a common set of rules across people who might be coming from across the country or across the world. But to us, and again, this is just a reflection of my own group of, you know, dozen or 15 guys that get together regularly. It doesn't matter if it's not the precise model. You know, yes, Games Workshop has only its stuff, but we substitute lots of other different models into Games Workshop games. You know, different manufacturers certainly get mixed and matched on even individual stands, because not everybody was exactly, you know, 5'11 and the same bulk. So your miniature figures, there's a, you know, ragtag quality if you want to have a more ragtag group. And yeah, there's maybe the guard, because, for example, Napoleon's guard had a certain height requirement. Well, maybe there wouldn't be, you know, a shorty guy in the front. But, I remember going down to Wally, and we were playing a modern game, and he had, I guess it was Vietnam era, and we were moving through the jungle, and he had camouflage painted troops and so forth. And he pulls out a stand, and he goes, the points out a stand, and he goes, "You notice anything odd about that?" And I looked down. "No, not really." "Well, you notice the guy who's a little bit shorter than the other ones?" "Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do notice him." "Well, take a close look at him." I'm looking, and that's when I realized that instead of a modern, combat vest and an M16, this guy is carrying a glued-on something, which looks like a blunderbuss, and he's got a conquistador helmet on him. So he needed an extra guy in the stand, but he just fucked one guy, and he just painted him camouflage colors. And if, you know, you have enough troops on the table, and you're not looking too closely, you don't notice. But he fought just as well. His name was Stumpy, because he was a little bit shorter. I think he was broken off at the angles at one point, and they just glued him back on.
Well, it's kind of like, well, when you paint all your models, people spend inordinate amount of time trying to make them look fantastic, when really they only, in my opinion, they only need to look as good as, you know, someone's going to see them from 3 or 4 feet away, because more often than not, you're not going to be getting right up next to your models when you're moving them around on the table. You're moving them around on the table, concentrating on hopefully having a good time and everything else that's going on, and not spending all the time as wondering, did you get that third button the color that you really wanted it to be?
Yeah, well, some of them, I mean, I had a guy who played with spray-painted models, you know, just like it was something out of a Risk box, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see you painted the horse a different color. Well, that's improvement. So, you know, but again, there's a, you know, miniatures especially, obviously when you buy a war game in a box, whether it's a Euro game or a hardcore hex grid war game, they're all uniform. If you have miniatures, a lot more do-it-yourself, and, you know, people have different views. One of the friends who's hosted a game up at his place, wow, almost 25 years we've been going there. He loves the terrain, he loves the painting, he loves the modeling, he loves the look of it. Don't put all those combat charts on there. If you got caps on the heads, well, it looks kind of silly. Can we hide them a little bit? You know, that's his appeal. Or that's the appeal of the war game to him. He loves the visual, and he was, you know, a commercial artist at one point in time. You know, others, you know, if you come to my basement, you're going to see a lot of trees that are made out of carpet. Yeah, they're thick, but they're green. They're out to do trees. You know, they're flat, so you can move your troops anywhere you want them. I have another guy who didn't like the fact that you could see the troops in the trees, and he built 6-inch tall hexes where he put all the terrain and the trees and stuff on top and had solid sides, and you know, like overturning a box. You'd put your troops in there, and when it came time to move them, he just asked everybody, you know, all right, turn around. Don't look at the table. There you go. Instant fog of war.
Hey. All sorts of different ways to do it.
That's part of what Wally did best, and that's part of why I brought a lot of his work forward and seeing if I could get a larger audience base for some of it. Some of it's clever.
So if people wanted to obtain a copy of this, what's the best way for them to purchase a copy of Wally Simon's Secrets of War Game Design?
Okay. If you're in the U.S. and the rest of the world in general, you can go online to onmilitarymatters.com, which is onmilitarymatters.com. That's a shop down in Hopewell, New Jersey. It's primarily a bookshop, specializes in military history. You won't find any other books there, some games and so forth. But on militarymatters.com, you can buy it there. If you're in the UK or Europe and you're listening to this podcast overseas, Caliber Books, which is caliberbooks.com, carries Secrets of War Game Design. The retail price on it is $19, plus shipping, obviously. And I believe when I last looked, it was whatever the pound dollar exchange rate was, I think it was about £15 in the UK. So those are the two places, depending on where you are in the world.
And would those places also happen to carry some of the other items you worked on, such as Snappy Nappy, your Napoleonic rules, and I know you also worked on Combat Action Command way back in the day.
Yeah, both of them carry those as well. All three of those are in print and available. Combat Action Command I didn't actually write, so I'll Snappy Nappy I designed and wrote, but Combat Action Command I edited. So the designer of that is Lee Sowers, and that's a Combat Action Command is a very tactical look at World War II. Lee actually ran a modern version for his real day job with Army Rangers and the New York City SWAT team, and used it as a teaching tool of low-level tactics. But he was a World War II buff, so he converted everything into World War II ease as opposed to modern. Making adjustments, of course, for firepower and lack of communications in World War II and so forth.
And if people want to keep up to date with different projects that you're working on, I know you've had your finger in many different pies over the years. What's the best way for people to keep up to date on everything happening in the world of Russ Lockwood?
Probably on militarymatters.com. There's a he puts out a weekly e-flyer that, it's not specifically about me. It's just, you know, the stock that he carries, but everything I have, I release through him. So I've known, Dennis Shorthouse runs it. I've known him for about 25 years. I met him up at the commercial artist who loved the look and feel of the game. So he's been running that shop for about 1989.
Almost as old as I am.
Yeah, 23 years? Yeah. I think he's been running the shop for 23 years. He was mail order initially, but then he moved into a space, so it's a nice little, it's got a little war game room, it's got obviously an office, and it's got the stock rooms in the back, and then he's got the main floor. So on Military Matters has been around. You'll find him in, folks will talk about him on TMP, the miniaturespage.com. That's another place where I occasionally go. Snappy Nappy has a Yahoo group. I always answer my Yahoo group questions. They make you, they certainly, when you, as soon as you broaden it out to people who play the rules, and this is something Frank Chadwick told me. I once asked him a question about command decision, and he looks at me and he goes, geez, I don't know. I'd have to look it up. And I said, but you're the designer. He says, yeah, but the question you're asking is a variation of about 100 variations that's already gone through my head and we've play tested out. You should ask somebody who's got the rules, because their entire universe is the rule set, as opposed to, you know, the designer who's tested everything trying to, you know, figure out whether the system works or not. A couple of nuggets from game designers I've tucked away in the back of my head that I try to follow from time to time.
Well, I want to thank you, Russ, for spending this time with us here on Wargaming Recon, and I want to strongly urge all of my listeners to go out and get a copy of Wally Simon's Secrets of Wargame Design. In my previous episode, I think it was episode 76, I gave a glowing review of it, and you know, this is a booklet that in my usual everyday kind of living, I would probably not have come across. So I was very grateful that you had sent me this review copy, and I just really enjoyed it. I can't wait for Volume 2 to come out, which I think you said is coming out perhaps in November, and being able to get a copy of that when that is available. And I just hope everyone reaches out and goes to onmilitarymatters.com and buys a copy of it, or if they're in the UK, you know, get it from Caliber Books. I just think it's fantastic, and I really appreciate all the hard work that you put into doing all the layout and the editing and cherry-picking those nuggets from those many years of Wally's writing and making them available again for this new next generation of people. I'm not someone who was around when he was first doing this, or at least not aware of all of it, and so I'm just kind of now getting into all this old-school wargaming sort of stuff. And I think there's a lot of people like that. There's a lot of talk about the graying of the hobby. And I think by making content like this available to people again and again and again who may not have come across it before, kind of maybe makes it a little bit easier for some of us who don't have such a long beard to get knee-deep into things and, you know, get introduced to all of it and fall in love and with all the content and the ways of thinking and just kind of take it and introduce it into our own gaming group. So I am very grateful that you sent a copy of this to me and that you have put this out there for everyone to be able to purchase.
Thanks, and I enjoyed being on your show. It's always entertaining to talk to someone who's a wargamer and tries to convey information and content to the wargaming public at large.
Thank you. You've been a fantastic guest, and I will, of course, be getting this recording up as usual per our release schedule, and when I do, I will be getting a copy of that to you, or at least a link to it, so that you can hear what has been put out. So I want to just thank you again for being on the show.
Nice. Great. Thanks a lot, Jonathan.
Okay. I hope you have a great evening.
You too.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Wargaming Recon. I want to thank all of you for listening to the show and remind you that you can find the show notes for this episode by going to wargamingforums.com/WR77. I also want to thank Troll in the Corner for signing up with my Bluehost affiliate link. Bluehost is very appreciative for new accounts over at bluehost.com. And since I am part of the affiliate program over there, I get a little bit of financial benefit for those of you who sign up with my link. If you are looking for some hosting, I have to strongly recommend Bluehost. I use them for the blog here and have been very happy with them for many years. If you would like to sign up with my link, I would really appreciate it. You can do so by going to wargamingforums.com/Bluehost, and that'll connect you right with Bluehost so you can sign up for your account, which you can get for as little as $6.95 per month. So thank you again for Troll in the Corner, trollitc.com, for using my affiliate link. I am very appreciative of that. As always, I want to remind you that you can get in touch with me and leave all sorts of feedback. You can send me an email at cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com, where audio files are welcome. You can also leave me a voicemail using the brand new phone number. You can make a call either from your computer or your phone, whether it's a cell or a landline. Please call 347-470-GAME. That's 347-470-4263. You can also find me on Facebook, on Pinterest, on Twitter, and Xbox Live. Of course, we are also on Stitcher Radio, and you can leave a voicemail for me as well. If you just want to go ahead and leave it on the computer, we have a link to that in the show notes, and you can go ahead and leave an audio recording that way for me. So I want to thank you again, and I want to give a big thank you to Matthew Ebel, who has been the creator of our intro song for many, many, many episodes. You can find out more about him by going to www.matthewebel.com. Thank you, and as always, keep on gaming. This show is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. If you enjoy this show, you might like some of the other podcasts on the network. Every Wednesday is a new episode of Indie Talks with Troll ITC owner Ben Gerber. Ben chats with people involved with indie games, movies, and much more. Every Thursday is a new episode of Geeks Explicitly, hosted by yours truly. All aspects of geek life are discussed. Wargaming Recon comes to you on the second and fourth Mondays of the month. I chat about historical and New England gaming. Monsters of the Shattered World, hosted by Troll ITC editor Brent Newhall, releases monthly. This story podcast details the adventures of a young scholar encountering strange monsters on a foreign planet. To learn more about the shows on TCPN, visit www.trollitc.com/TCPN.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner network at trollitc.com. and give Indie Talks a listen.
Geeks Explicitly. New episodes coming at you every Thursday with Drew and Jonathan talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly, then only at trollitc.com.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Purple Duck Games. You can find them at purpleduckgames.blogspot.com. You can see their art showcased on Pinterest, which you'll find at pinterest.com/purpleduckgames. And you can see tons of their products available at rpgnow.com, through paizo.com, or gumroad.com. Just search for Purple Duck Games. They have a ton of original content out there. They are supporting their own open gaming content called Porphyria, which they currently have. The Gods of Porphyria and The Lands of Porphyria is in development. Lots of great stock art available for GMs and players and game developers such as myself who want to insert great art into their games as well. You can also find out about Purple Mountain, their mega dungeon, which is being released one level at a time. Thanks very much, Purple Duck Games.